This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
NHL Utah is something that Maddie doesn't like. We just found out here on break. You want to name Maddie? The temporary Utah NHL team? Is that what you want?
Anything but NHL Utah, please. That's just like, no.
That is one of the things we'll ask. Greg Wyshynski here on MVSW Wednesdays. How are you, Wish?
I mean, are you saying not NHL Utah for year one? Because it's not going to be called NHL Utah.
No, I'm just saying for year one, the temporary, the placeholder name. PWHL is gone, you know, PWHL, Toronto, Montreal, Boston, Minnesota. I'd be fine if Utah did the same thing. I would have no issue with it whatsoever.
Yeah, but why NHL? Why not just Utah Hockey Club?
Ugh, too soccer.
Why is that bad?
Too soccer.
Have you seen our sport? I mean, let's see. An influx of European talent, guys diving all over the ice.
Oh, jeez. Hey, you
it's
know, hang
a
on.
Net.
Let me penalty kicks. Let me jump in on this one because every single break here on the show or around the clock in my life, and I'm sure maybe even though you're out of market, you're probably getting them as well. I get the what's wrong with Nylander texts. Like, it's nonstop. I understand, like, nature abhors a vacuum. There's no information going out. So all people have is guesswork and throwing darts. How do you look at the Nylander phenomenon here?
I look at it as it being indicative of any injury that's being kept clandestine. And the mystery is only amplified by the fact that the information the team has given us are that it's not something that's been lingering, right? And that it's not something that happened away from the game. We know that. And so we can only surmise that it happened in the last game or games of the season, to which obviously Leafs fans have been going full Zapruder film and trying to figure out what happened to Willie Nylander. So the way the team has handled the flow of information, which is to be expected in the playoffs, all these teams get really tight-lipped about it, only lends itself to the mystery of it all, on top of the fact that it's a 1-1 series heading back to Toronto and the idea that he could play in a game three is pretty dramatic in the flow of the series.
It had to have been game 82. It had to have been game 82 based on everything that we've been told so far. But having said that, like, I don't know. I was saying this to Maddie in the first hour, Wish. I don't know if the Maple Leafs are mishandling this until we know what happened. Like, this is one of those situations where I know that, you know, this part of the game, you want as much information as possible. But I don't know if they're mishandling it until we know what exactly has happened here. And here's the other thing.
Well, can I stop you there? How would we, like, in my soliloquy I just made, I didn't say the Leafs mishandled it.
No, I know. And
are there people that believe the Leafs are mishandling? Are there people that believe the Leafs are mishandling this?
Yes. But these
why?
Listen, this because these are people that crave information, need to know it right now. But here's my point about that one. I really thought, and I was wrong, but I really thought that with the NHL cozying up to sports wagering and sports gambling, that by now we would have a situation where information, even at playoff time, and even if it's just upper body, lower body, information would become more readily available because the gambling companies would demand it. I was about 1,000,000% wrong on that. And it still may change, who knows? But did you think that by now, considering how much gambling money is in the ecosystem, that injury information would be different and more free-flowing?
No, because the players have a say in it. And one of the things that you always hear from the players or from the NHLPA itself is that disclosure of injuries, even in vague terms, is something that they generally oppose. Like, if it was up to the PA, we wouldn't hear anything about the health status of these players.
Yep.
So I'm not surprised in the least that we're not there as far as injuries. And quite frankly, when it comes to something like Willie Nylander, like, what do you want the Leafs to say ahead of game three? He's in, he's out. I mean, it could be a situation where a guy takes warmups and then feels something during warmups and gets pulled. Is that the Leafs' fault? Or are they, you know, obfuscating the truth? The part of the gambling information flow that I have a huge problem with, and something that has a greater impact on the success or failure of a hockey team than whether or not Willie Nylander plays, is there's simply no reason why teams shouldn't disclose who their starting goaltender is at least 24 hours before the game.
No.
Unless you're playing a back-to-back situation. Like, there's zero reason for it. They know who's playing. And if you want people to bet on the sport, you don't go into an NFL Saturday and they're like, I don't know, it could be Aaron Rodgers,
yeah.
It could be Tyrod Taylor, I don't know. You know, it's gamesmanship nonsense.
Yeah.
And if you're looking for the root cause of what could end up subverting the NHL's campaign to grow the sport through sports wagering, and I know that's a dicey prospect to begin with, but it's what they're doing. The idea that we're still playing this stupid shell game of what goalie is going to start is much more deleterious to that effort than any kind of injury disclosure.
Okay, let me. I don't want to get sidetracked by going down that hole, but I don't disagree with you. Now, mind you, I'm very much of the mind that more information means more coverage, so it's good for everybody. But I say that as a member of the media, so I understand conflicted.
There's only one time where a player's injury status bothered me and the disclosure of that status. And it was, I don't remember what year it was. Maybe you do. When Stamkos was out, it wasn't like during the bubble. It was definitely when we were there covering the team. And it was an injury he was dealing with, and he was working through it. Yeah. He's in practice, and he's talking to us almost every other day that are on the series. And there's no actual disclosure of what the injury is or what he's dealing with or when he could come back. It's always this sort of like vague, he's working through it. You know, he's getting closer. And when you get to like 2 weeks of that, and especially when you're making the player available to the media,
yeah,
just tell us what the damn injury is. And we'll all deal with it.
Well, the Maple Leafs are not making Nylander available to talk to anybody right now. Okay, I'm going to give you a list of names here. And I want to sort of preface this again with the it's early. I hate to be the it's early guy, but I'm going to be the it's early guy. But nonetheless.
Okay.
Alex Ovechkin, Elias Pettersson, Mitch Marner, Connor Hellebuck, Jake Oettinger. Of those, which performances are the most alarming or concerning for you?
It's easily Oettinger and Hellebuck. Easily. Because in both cases, they were supposed to be, if not the greatest advantage for their teams in those respective series, then maybe like 1A as far as advantages in those series. The goaltending advantage that Winnipeg had over Colorado was palpable.
Yep.
And it's two games in and Alexander Georgiev is outplaying Connor Hellebuck. And then in the Dallas series,
yeah,
the advantage was, well, Jake Oettinger, by the time he got to the conference final last year, was completely on empty. It's one of the reasons why he wasn't his dominant self. Things will be different this time against Vegas because now we've got Otter. And by the way, he's been arguably the best goalie in the league in the last month. And then he's bad.
Game 83, he was bad.
Yeah. So, like, in both cases, a thing that you thought you could rely on is all of a sudden a question mark on top of all of the other question marks that you deal with in those respective series.
Mm-hmm.
In Dallas's case, playing a Vegas team that was like a steamroller that they couldn't beat last year. In Winnipeg's case, knowing they go into that series at a talent disadvantage to Colorado. And your faith is shaken a little bit. That's why this game, too, for Dallas is huge. Did you know, Merrick, I'll throw some numbers at you.
Okay.
Since 2014, when we started the wild card system, teams that have home ice advantage and lose the first two games of their series are 3-24 in those series. Over the last 30 seasons, I should say, only 19% of teams that had home ice advantage and dropped games 1 and 2 rallied to win the series. So that is the importance. That is what is on the line for the Dallas Stars in game two.
You know what's in, I was mentioning this on the show yesterday. The fascinating thing with this series, with Vegas and Dallas, is what do we say all season long about the Central Division? You don't need to win any division. It doesn't really matter. But the one division you definitely want to win is the Central. Because yeah. there's that those three teams, Winnipeg Jets, Colorado Avalanche, Dallas Stars. You don't want to be facing one of those two teams. Turns out this may end up being the worst possible. Like winning the division, be careful what you ask for. Winning the division, and we'll see what happens tonight, may be the worst thing that happened to Dallas this year.
Yeah. And then on the flip side of that, look at how the bracket is setting up for my pick for the Stanley Cup, the Edmonton Oilers, where they draw an LA team that they know how to beat, and they showed that in game one. And then now all of a sudden, you're either looking at potentially the Vancouver Canucks down one Thatcher Demko or the Nashville Predators, who were a wild card team coming out of the other part of the Pacific bracket. I mean, the Rangers might have the easier path, if I'm being honest, because I do think that they, in looking at the numbers, do actually match up pretty well with Carolina if it's Carolina. But the Oilers certainly, like if they do win, we're going to talk about that that last day of the season with the Knights and the Kings, and where they finish as being a huge stepping stone, I think, towards their eventual victory if the bracket breaks the way that we expected to and if Demko's out for as long as we think he might be.
When I looked at the Western Conference playoffs, I said, first of all, there's no upsets. Second of all, I said, whoever gets out is going to be so mugged here. But I said, if there's going to be one, because I thought, you know, just like the East last year, like everything last year was players from the West going East. That was the theme. You saw it at trade deadline. Everyone in the East loaded up. This year at deadline, everybody in the West loaded up. It was the complete opposite of what happened last year. Getting out of the West was going to be killer unless there was a team that had one or maybe a long shot here, two easy series. And to your point, that might be lining up here for the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, for Edmonton.
And that might just set it up.
I didn't see your picks. Now,
okay.
Who did you pick in the Islanders series? Because
you've
been writing Valentine's to the Islanders for like
Carolina
years.
Carolina.
But you couldn't, yeah, you had to take Carolina.
Had to take Carolina.
Was the only upset Carolina. You picked the Leafs? Did you pick the Leafs against Boston?
I picked the Leafs against Boston.
So that's the only upset, right? Or did you pick another one?
Who else did I have? That might have been the only upset.
I jumped on the Nashville train.
I took Vancouver.
Vancouver bugged me because they were real top heavy. They bugged me a little bit because I didn't love the way that they finished. I obviously couldn't foresee the Demko thing, although I talked about on the show for the entirety of the season that the reason they were in first place is because they were blessed by not being injured.
Yep.
I mean, Pettersson, Besser, Miller, Quinn, and until March, Demko.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Predators were a buzzsaw down the stretch.
Here's the thing about...
They split in Vancouver and then make their bones in Nashville. We'll see if that prediction holds.
The only thing that I wonder about, and again, like I don't think that's the only way that Nashville has to play if they're going to beat the Vancouver Canucks, namely diving in front of every puck. And boy, did Andrew Burnett sell a bunch of T-shirts yesterday, commit to the pain. Like if that doesn't have like Nashville yellow T-shirt written all over it, I don't know what does. Nashville, start pressing the shirts now. Nashville Predators, commit to the pain. Although that kind of sounds like it would work for a Toronto Maple Leafs fan as well. Commit to the pain with a 67
or
on the back.
Buffalo Sabres,
or Buffalo Sabres.
A lot of fan bases that could definitely.
Yes, I do understand that great line from Bruno yesterday. But I just don't know that if you're Nashville, like you can win a game playing like that with 30 block shots. But how many games can you win before attrition is really a thing? Like, you have everybody, Colton Sissons, Ryan McDonough, you expected from it, Roman Josi selling it. Like, you have so many guys doing it. It is a recipe for injury, obviously. I just wonder, like, if you're Nashville, if your game plan is layers and blocked shots, how long can that work?
Yeah, well, you know, that's a round two problem. Because it could easily work three more times in this series.
Oof.
You don't think they got ice baths in Nashville?
No, they do, of course. Like, they haven't lost a recipe for ice yet in Tennessee. I understand that. But that's just like such a recipe for injury.
Well, based on the cocktails I've had there, Mr. Merrick, I can tell you for a fact that they have not lost the recipe for ice cubes.
Yes, yes, certainly true. But I don't know. I mean, that series just got really interesting. And the Demko injury is, of course, the wild card to all of it. I do wonder... So I think we're all sort of scratching our heads. Like, I threw Elias Pettersson in that conversation with Ovi and Marner and the two goaltenders. You know, maybe at the end of it, maybe we find out that Elias Pettersson's hurt.
Could be. The Ovi thing's wild. So I covered that game last night.
Yeah.
And I kind of misspoke in saying that Spencer Carberry called out Ovechkin. He more called out his play than called out Ovechkin. And but I gotta say, like, you everybody who's listened to MVSW knows I've covered the Capitals for a really long time.
Yeah,
and I know that there have been, you know, coaches who have nodded at Ovechkin needing to be better in certain situations, but I've never heard a guy in the playoffs call out the deficiencies in Ovi's game like Carberry did last night. He's struggling. He's a little bit off. He can't get his shots through. He should have 4 to 5 scoring opportunities in a game, and he's not had really any.
Yeah.
Like, it was he's not throwing his captain under the bus. So I don't want to make it out like that. But rare is the criticism of Ovechkin through the years in the playoffs like that. And especially at 38 years old, when you know he's not the same guy he used to be.
No, but I think that someone like Ovechkin, and again, like, the visuals last night were pretty tough. There is, you know, having a hard time with the puck that led to the Zibanejad turnover, which led to the K'Andre Miller shorthanded goal, while Ovechkin does the flyby on the back check. There's the standing next to the right post elevator practice for like 30 seconds or 25 seconds. Like, some of the visuals just don't look great. Now, having said that, Ovechkin can turn around in game three and score, you know, two power play goals and have two regular strength assists. And no one would be surprised. It's just a tough look right now. And I'm with you. Like, it's rare that during the playoffs specifically, you see a coach calling out a star player. Like, Jared Bednar, you know, called out Georgiev after game one. Kale McCarr, you know, called out Georgiev by saying, like, you know, it seemed like all the mistakes we made ended up in the back of the net. It's a shot at the goalie. Like, it doesn't feel like one at the time, but like,
yeah,
pause
but
for a second.
Fairness,
it's a shot at the goalie.
But in fairness, that shot at the goalie also went by him. So
that's fine. that's fine. Oh, the goalie got hit. Oh, almost got hit by a bus. Yeah, he went through his legs instead. But like, yeah, you're right. Like, it's rare. But then when it comes to someone like Ovechkin, and by the way, Carberry is, as you know, like, one of the great interviews in the game.
Oh, incredible.
He's tremendous. Carberry, I think, understands his team, obviously. I just don't know that Ovechkin will look at that and shut down. Like, some players, as we've seen historically, get called out by the coach and like, okay, that's it, I'm shutting it down. I don't think Ovechkin's that guy. You've covered him for a long time. We have Tarik El-Bashir on the show here all the time talking about Alex Ovechkin. He's not a guy that's going to shut down when Spencer Carberry says, quote, he looks a little bit off, he's struggling.
Yeah, He's got a tremendous amount of pride.
Yeah.
And you know that because of how much this meant to him to be competitive and to make the playoffs. He didn't want to be a guy whose only point of interest in his waning years in this league is the Gretzky chase. Like, he wanted to play relevant games. He wanted to play in the playoff spotlight. Like, I've always respected it, you know, because when we've seen historic record chases in other leagues, I don't necessarily think that winning a championship or being in a playoff spot is as important as, like, don't get hurt during your Lou Gehrig streak or keep swinging for the fences to break the Hank Aaron record. I think the biggest thing, and again, Carberry was great last night, and great to elaborate when I asked him what he meant by Ovechkin struggling. I asked him that question and he gave a very eloquent answer. And part of it was that they need to get him away from what the Rangers are using to defend him. And what the Rangers are using to defend him are Adam Fox and Ryan Lindgren mostly, and then the Zibanejad line and the Gaudreau line as well. And so, like, they're going to get better matchups at home. Maybe they can figure out a way to break through this really good Rangers penalty kill to get him the puck more. I know they scored 2 goals last night, but the Rangers kill's been really good.
Yep.
And we'll see what happens. But again, like, You just don't want him to go out like this. Like, we don't want our lasting playoff memories of Alex Ovechkin to be feebly mishandling a puck in the neutral zone, leading to a shorthanded game-winning goal. Like, we don't want that to be the thing that we remember.
Yes. Let me ask you about the Islanders.
Sure.
That's, was it 80 seconds at the end of that game where we saw about three or four different personalities of the New York Islanders, which in a lot of ways kind of reflects the personality of the head coach, because we've seen Patrick Roy behave a lot of different ways, both in the NHL and in junior hockey as well. So the Islanders went from being up by a puck and playing 5-on-6 to being tied to playing 6-on-5 to going into complete meltdown in 80 seconds, was it?
About
90, yeah. 90 seconds. I've never seen a team show so many different personalities over the course of just over a minute, like it did with the Islanders two nights ago. I don't know why I keep coming back to this one, but it was stunning the way that it all happened.
Yeah, it's like that scene at the end of The Thing where they're trying to kill The Thing and The Thing becomes all of the other things that The Thing had mimicked throughout the entire movie.
That's a great point.
No, I mean, the Islanders, but that's the Islanders. Like, from week to week, this team looks different.
Yeah.
You know, there's one week where they look like a playoff also-ran. Then there's a week where they're beating the Rangers. Like, you know, they are very, very confusing schizophrenic team a little bit. But let me go back to Patrick Roy, though.
Okay.
Honestly, at this, I know why he's doing it, because you don't want to show emotional panic in a situation like this where your team blows a 3-0 lead and then maybe squanders the series in a 9-second span in the third period. Like, you don't want to show that the pressure has gotten to you. But I feel like we've been sold a false bill of goods here. I did not realize that Patrick Roy was in his John Tortorella sweater vest phase of not being volcanic and not challenging Rod Brind'Amour to fights. Like, where's the guy we thought we were getting? Like, we've been waiting for Patrick Roy to get back in this league for a
shake
while.
The glass.
To be the guy rattling the glass next to the bench like he was in Colorado.
But,
and this guy is as even keeled, and it's like almost to the point of are you on Somanex or something? Where's the Patrick Roy that I want out of this guy?
Hang on. Did you see who he threw over the boards at the end of that game?
Who?
Matt Martin. Casey Cizikas.
Like, sure.
Like, at the end of the game, like, that was, like, old school. Not just, like, NHL Colorado, but also Quebec Ramparts. That was old school. Okay, you know what? Let's, quote, unquote, send a message. Oh, by the way.
Send a message, yeah. But I want to see him in a post-game press conference slamming his fist on the table like a European dictator. Like, that's what I wanted of Patrick Roy, and I'm not getting it right now.
Well, we'll see. I don't know that we see that. Put it this way. I wonder if it weren't the Islanders that Patrick Roy was coaching, I wonder if we would have seen that.
You think it's like a Lou thing? Like,
don't you?
Could be.
Because I'm with you. Like, I'm sure Patrick Roy's instinct are like, I'm going to go fight the coach now. Matt Martin is going to jump Stefan Nason. I'm going to go fight Rod Brind'Amour. Like, I'm sure that was part of the instinct. But I do wonder if that's an Islander slash Lou thing.
How do you feel them going back to Sorokin in game three?
I'm not surprised. I think that Patrick Roy and the rest of the teams would have been waiting to get there. But having said that, like, Varlamov saved their season. So you had to give them the benefit of the doubt for two games. Just like Alex Lyon saved Florida Panthers season last year, you had to start him in that series. Eventually, you were going to Bob, but that guy got you there. But then the minute you had a chance to go back and a reason to go back to your starter, you went back to them. You disagree?
What's the percentage chance that the way Martinook scored the game winner factored into his thinking on who should be the goalie? That's
maybe
a pretty embarrassing goal. That's a pretty embarrassing goal.
It's a pretty embarrassing one. I don't know. Do you not get this? I'm always of the mind that when you have someone like Ilya Sorokin, the coach is looking for a way to get back to that goaltender. Now, the mitigating factor here with Varlamov and Roy is they have relationship going back to Colorado. That's the only thing that, for me, complicates it. But I'm always of the mind that the head coach is looking to get back to the number one. Like, you'll ride a backup goalie for a while, but then when you have a chance, you have your moment of opportunity, you go back. So I'm not surprised at all if they go back to Sorokin. Are you?
I'm not. I am in the sense that I think that Varley's been demonstrably the better goalie this year.
Yeah.
But I'll say this about this change. Look, they're in a real pickle, okay, against Carolina. They're in a real pickle. They need to come home and use the strength of their home ice advantage to try to get back into the series. And all due respect to Matt Barzal, I think Ilya Sorokin is the most popular player on that team. And I think having him between the pipes and having the fans rally around him might do them well to really kind of reset things in game three.
That is interesting. Let me, we'll see. I mean, listen, I really do. I might be in the minority here, but I'm really enjoying this series. I really am. And just mainly because of all the sidebars to all of this. But let me ask you about one more thing. What is it with empty net goals this year? Whether it's Morgan Riley, whether it's Brady Tkachuk, now it's Brock Nelson / Kyle Palmieri on Jake Guentzel. Like, what is this saying about where we're at in the NHL with, like, all right, I get it. Ridley Gregg with the slap shot. Okay, I guess. Nico Hischier slides a puck into Ottawa's net a couple of seconds after the final buzzer goes. Okay. Jake Guentzel snaps it in. I know that Brock Nelson was chasing him all the way and has already been whacking him, but just continues all along the boards. And then Palmieri picks up when Brock Nelson is done with him. What is it about players getting upset and having their crybaby moments that empty net goals, Greg Wyshynski, were at this point in the game?
Oh, because it's the natural evolution of aggrievement culture in hockey. And by that, I mean it's the natural evolution of they used their first power play unit in a blowout in the third period. And that kind of nonsense, you know, like it's all part of the same vein of faux motivation that these teams all try to dig into and tap that vein, especially at playoff time.
Yeah,
it's not a surprise. It's all the stuff that these guys have always used for motivation. It's like the no one believes in us culture bleeds into they did something to us. And maybe it tracks back to Slapshot. I mean, that's how long we've been here. It tracks back to Slapshot, where Reg is literally inventing things in the locker room to get his team going against the opponents, right? I mean, like that's it's all part of hockey culture.
Call us names.
This is the latest mutation.
Call us names.
They call us names. Exactly. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. And that was a movie in the 1970s?
It was 1977 when it came out, yes.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Zero is born. this is how long we've been dealing with this. I am old. It is old. And this is just the latest mutation of it.
Before I wrap up with you here, and I'm going to get on the Oilers page here in a couple of seconds. I have another game tonight against the Los Angeles Kings. It is game two. But before we get to talking about that, I want to finish, Greg, our conversation today by asking you about the Buffalo Sabres and Lindy Ruff, who said you can't go home again. You know Lindy Ruff from his various tours around the NHL, the Buffalo Sabres, the Dallas Stars, the New Jersey Devils, and now back with the Swords. This one was fast. This was a quick, quote-unquote, search. This one, to me, feels like it's not just Kevin Adams, but a good dose of Terry Pegula with his thumb on the scale. And this decision, how did you see the Lindy Ruff news this week?
Well, why wouldn't Terry Pegula want to hire the coach that last led the team to the playoffs well over a decade ago? It is interesting to we don't know what the entomology is of who made the decision, but you know, we will point out that there is a certain hockey nepotism thing going on with Kevin Adams having coached with Lindy Ruff in Buffalo
too. 2 years.
So that fits the bill. Two things on this. One is you can't deny that this guy does have the pedigree now of working well with young players. I mean, when a player like Jack Hughes credits Lindy Ruff with making him a better all-around player, you have to respect that. And you know, the fact that he could do the same for some of the really bright young players on this Sabres roster can't be ignored. That being said, I come back to this, and I hate to do this because I don't know. This is pure speculation. But the Devils improved by, 48 points year over year.
Yep.
The season in which Andrew Burnett was the associate coach. And then Andrew Burnett goes to Nashville.
Yep.
They drop by, 47 points. in the standings. And then Nashville makes the playoffs. And I don't want to assign all the good things that happened with that Devils team to one guy, because a lot of the good things were also a healthy Dougie Hamilton, goaltending that was 10th in the league, that was not then 31st in the league the next season. There's a lot of things that went well for that team. But the way with which they played, the style they had, the effectiveness of that style is what I see in Nashville now and did not see in New Jersey. So if we're using that Devils season of massive point improvement as a reason to believe the same could happen in Buffalo, well, I don't know if that's necessarily what you want. I don't think it's an anomaly that the Devils were good, but I do think it's an anomaly that they had such a massive improvement, because I'm not quite sure if it all is Lindy Ruff's doing, if I'm being honest.
What happened to the Florida Panthers when Andrew Burnett took over?
They got good.
Top team.
they got real good.
Secret's kind of out that that guy from Sudbury. Yeah, he could do
pretty well. But again, like the other thing too about what made, whether it's Brunette or Lindy Ruff or whoever, what made them look good was having competent goaltending. And so if UPL or Levi or whomever can step up next year and give this team competent goaltending, then Lindy Ruff will look really good. Ooh. And if they can't, then they'll look bad. And it's as simple as that.
The Utah names list is out. Have you seen this?
Yep.
Utah Mammoth.
You mean as far as the trademarks?
Utah Ice, Utah Yetis. Oh, I do like that. Utah Venom, Utah Fury, Blizzard, Outlaws, and Hockey Club. Soap and warm water feeling for one of these or no?
There's two that are clearly my front runners.
I know you. Yetis?
Nope.
What? I don't know you.
Because it bothers me that the plural of Yeti is Yetis. It is canonically Yetis, but it sounds weird to me. Yeti should be like fish. And I'll say fishes. The two for me are the Mammoth and the Outlaws. The Outlaws are something that we don't have in hockey right now. We had it in minor league hockey. We've not had it in the NHL. I think that's a dope name. But the Mammoth, I mean, dude. Here's what you'd like to do if you're the Utah team. You'd like to make money. You won't be successful, but you want to make money. How many little, tiny, plush, mammoth dolls will you sell to children in Utah if you're the Mammoth? My God. Ton. You're going to name him Wooly. He's going to go around. He's going to hug the kids. Clayton Keller is going to be like riding on his shoulders. Like, it's a whole thing. Hmm. It's right there. Ryan Smith, print money. Mammoth, go.
All right, we will. We'll see where that goes. You have any love for Venom?
I mean, I do, but I think that you can't own that corner. I mean, Marvel owns that corner.
All right.
Blizzard's fun because you're going to have a natural rivalry with the Avalanche, anyway. And also, I think that you'll have a certain generation calling them the Zards, and you'll have another younger generation calling them the Blizzy. And so, I think that's a really fun name for those reasons. Get Fury out of there, and I'm not huge on ice. It's just stupid. It's like naming your team the Sticks.
The Boards. The Utah Boards.
The Boards, right. That's right.
All right, we'll wrap on that. You be good. Talk in 7 days. We'll see where this goes with Utah here. You be good. Enjoy the playoffs tonight.
You too. Take care.
All right, Greg Wyshynski from MVSW. MVSW Wednesdays. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN. And the drop.